A Psalm of David.
Hello and welcome to the podcast B-Side. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning. Hello, Tim. Hello, everybody.
And how are you doing on this wonderful morning?
Oh, inspired by my ride on the London Underground to rebuild the civilization.
Goodness me. All right. So maybe you'll tell me a little bit more about that later, unless it involves some kind of poetic flair that you want to add to this
morning. I'm sure we can weave it in, Tim.
I'm sure we can. All right. So the podcast. Let's first just recap. What is the podcast and what is the B-side?
Okay, so the Bardcast is our little bit of a taste on Radio Maria of Bard School on Air, in which we encourage you, the listeners, to be creative in the light of your faith, whether it's writing poems or short stories or songs. And I was inspired, as you probably know by now, years ago by reading all about the bards in Ireland of the 8th century who were called to speak truth to the king without fear and entertain everyone, from the peasant to the king. And they were worth the king's ransom. And I thought that was wonderful, because as Christians, we're worth the blood of Christ. We have been bought at a great price. And I thought, wow, therefore, if they valued their culture at that level, that they would pay the same as they paid for the king, for the bard, then I should be able to create some culture that was worth being a Christian, you know, worth the blood of Christ. And so that's been my mission. And so 25 years later, here I am with all of you sharing your poems and sharing your stories and inspirations as a way to try and build the culture. So that's why we're here. And then the B-side was your inspiration, Tim. So you can tell us what that is.
The B-side is a chance for us to look at the episode that just passed and then to go a little bit deeper into some of the themes and to look at some of the things that have kind of excited or maybe just need a little bit more attention. And also it's a way for us to re-emphasize the prompt which came from the previous episode and encourage people to write, because if you're listening to this, it means there's still a few days left to write something and to send it in. And what's the address that listeners should send it into?
Yeah, they can send it in to Sarah with an H at sarahdenordwall.com, or an easy address, bardschool@gmail.com.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, let's look at the previous episode, which was episode 14, and it was called The Garden Tomb, after your wonderful poem. And it also had two very interesting things that it looked ahead to. That was two feasts that came next to each other in a very unusual way. The first one was Divine Mercy Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was the Annunciation, which fell this year on the 8th of April, strangely, because it cannot fall within the Easter Passion. Sorry, the
Holy Week.
Holy Week, the Lenten Holy Week,
yeah.
Leading up to Easter. And so that provided some very interesting reflections. This episode was very contemplative, I thought, as having sort of Our Lady's Yes as one of its points of departure, as well as Faustina's visions, which was really nice.
Yeah.
And what did we have? We had your poem, as I've mentioned, The Garden Tomb. We had Jackie's poem on Calvary, which was really beautiful. We had a piece of music from you, which was also lovely. And then we had the prompt. Is there anything I'm missing out? Just to give it a kind of...
No, I don't think so. It was how they weave all together, really. What I'm interested in, Tim, is what landed for you and what made you go, oh, well, I never thought that before. Because, of course, the whole thread of the episode was to get people to try and remember, when was it that I had a revelation about what my faith actually meant to me, where it actually landed and I went, oh, wow, yes.
Yeah.
And then to try and capture that, just by describing the moment, just like St. Faustina did, just like, you know, Jackie had done when that Catholic priest said to her, oh, actually, you know, great, some amazing difficulties. Wow, fantastic. She kind of had a mental turnaround at looking at the times in her life when she'd been made to feel absolutely powerless and that those had been, in fact, the key to the door. So this episode is all about paradigm shift, and it's all about looking at the meaning of suffering and, as in Our Lady's case, embracing something absolutely new. And yet, because of course we're in the time of the resurrection now, asking ourselves, how do I know that this is the Lord? How did Our Lady know this is the Lord asking me to do this extraordinary, not done before, not proposed before thing? How do you know? And really, I think the heart of the episode is the human heart, is that the fact of what happened in the Holy House at the Annunciation, what happened in Our Lady's heart, what happens in our heart, what happened in St. Faustina's heart, Jackie's heart, actually matters. Because so much of our attention in life is focused on the disasters over here, the solar eclipse, the end of the world, blah-de, blah-de, blah. Possibly all phenomenally important, but not important if it doesn't change your heart.
Yeah.
Because the only way of looking at the world and making it meaningful is if my heart actually matters. Otherwise, why bother living at all?
Yeah.
So I think that's what the heart of it was. But what was it for you?
No, that is definitely what came up for me. I mean, there's a quote right from the beginning where, focusing in on St. Faustina, you say that the intimacy in one human heart is the engine room for all world affairs. I thought that was very interesting. And I wanted to know, I had three questions that came to mind, really, when I heard that. The first one is, why is that true? Or why do you think that's true?
I think that's true, well, because I agree with Charles Péguy when he says everything begins with mysticism and ends in politics.
Okay.
So basically, if God's created the cosmos as... So this is the question. Has God created the cosmos as the main thing?
Uh-huh.
Or is it the background? Is it the set for human existence and for a relationship with God? In other words, am I, as in, you know, the total perspective vortex of, you know, what was it called? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yep.
If I was to put myself at the center of the universe and see just how big I was in relation to the size of the material universe and discover just how ridiculously small I am, does that make me absolutely tortured to death and mental destruction? Or does it reveal that in spite of my size of being... relative to a subatomic particle, not very much, because God loves me and God has no size.
Mm.
That's the question, isn't it? Not so much to be or not to be, but what's the relevance of being? What
yeah.
is our relationship to being? And so that's the beginning of the answer, I think.
Right. And when he says it ends in politics, does he mean in the sort of that it goes nowhere after that?
No, quite the opposite.
Okay.
He means that the outcome of the human heart... So let's go back to the Bible. So if we are living in right relationship with God and the human heart is happy and at peace with God, then nature itself flourishes. The polis, the world.
Okay, the polity would maybe be...
You could use that word too. That flourishes. But if we're going to go and take a kind of Marxist view, say... do not inquire about origins, and let's see the human person as a unit and the state as our father, then that has a completely different outcome.
Yeah. I think maybe the error would be to try and turn that on its head and to say that things begin in politics and then somehow inspire contemplation.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I read an essay by Rowan Williams who attempted to do just that. And I have to say, much as I enjoy many things that Rowan Williams said, I thought his argument was incomprehensible and perhaps just misguided.
Now, the second question that I had for you on that, or that arose, was if we believe that to be true, namely that intimacy in the human heart is the engine room of all world affairs. If we actually believed it, how would we live?
We would live like Saint Therese of Lisieux.
Yeah, I think that's a really good answer.
Yeah, I mean, she said to one of her nuns once, apparently, who she saw picking up, I don't know, a piece of paper that she hadn't particularly wanted to pick up. And she said to her, "Well done. You have done more for the world in overcoming your reluctance to do that action than if you had gone to Napoleon himself and changed the policy of, I don't know, tolerance of the church or something." And that is probably one of the early times when I thought, oh, is that true? And if it is, wow, because it makes my life, my actions, my daily life, and my guardianship of my heart much more significant.
It's interesting how that quote actually encapsulates exactly what we were just saying about contemplation and politics.
Yeah.
So then the third thing is, how can art or artists make this truth known? Again, the truth that intimacy in the human heart is the engine room of all world affairs.
Well, I think just by living it, because I think if we're too obsessed with outcomes, we're going to start moving out of the spirit of humility into the spirit of manipulation. And the spirit of control and manipulation is the essence of the spirit of witchcraft.
Mm.
So basically, Christianity is about saying, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, not my plan be executed."
Yeah.
So magic is all about my will is the whole of the law, disgusting, awful, vile inversion of everything. So it makes a lot of difference, doesn't it? How we view the beauty of things and we just let them go. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a plan, submitting it to God, and as the Jesuits always encourage us to do in spiritual direction, whatever plan you have, nothing wrong with maxing it out, hooray, all for the glory of God, then lay it on the altar.
Hmm.
And if you're happy for it to be absolutely swept away, either by events or your spiritual director who goes, no, not this year, or maybe not ever, then you're free.
Hmm.
You're free.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that comes to an understanding of freedom, which is a uniquely probably Judeo-Christian contribution. I'm just thinking out loud, because often people will say, well, you know, if we're free, like they look at the freedom of the will in terms of the freedom to do right and wrong at the same time, which I think is a misunderstanding what freedom is. Like, freedom is the ability to choose between multiple good and right. And
as the choice thing was the idol that led to all freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. Okay. So as an artist, in order to encapsulate this or to bring this to the world, one would need to believe that it's true, to live like it were true, and to not be so obsessed with outcomes. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, you know, I'm on an artist's thread, an arts group that I really enjoy being in. I love to be in groups rather than just lead them. It's always great to be learning all the time. And there was a beautiful post that someone put up there this morning about success and what is it. And because sometimes one's outcome can be, wow, everybody will know about me, or I'll be really popular. I'll cause a seismic earthquake, like the fans of Taylor Swift had a measurable impact by jumping up and down at her latest concert, whatever. That kind of an impact gets people really excited. But in fact, success can be, I was real, I was authentic in writing that song, and it moved one person to feel not alone in the world. It connected. In other words, if it's true that work is light made visible or work is love made visible, then that's exactly the same for the artist. There's nothing different, really.
Yeah. I was speaking to Ella Kalitsa last night, whose music often plays on Radio Maria, and she said that when she tries to be clever in writing songs, it doesn't work, but when she just tries to be truthful, then something comes out, which I think is very much in line with what you're saying here. If you're trying to make some kind of impact, it often fails.
Yeah. And when you hear Ella sing, you know that that's the authenticity with which she is singing. She was singing so beautifully at, and she plays is it violin or viola? I'm not sure.
Viola, yes. Don't get that wrong.
Yes, don't.
I've been told.
But she's just absolutely gorgeous. And I heard her actually as well. I heard her singing at one of Edwin's events recently, which you are going to be performing in on the 21st. Shout out for your singing on the 21st of April. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely beautiful. And heard your songs sung in Cambridge recently. And it's those intimate surroundings that I think are the most profound when you're with a small group of people sharing with friends. I think that's just the ideal. But with Ella, I also heard her sing at the Turbine Theatre a couple of years ago, I think. And she was singing the role of Joan of Arc in an astonishing piece that was created in the 80s and really, really deserves to be heard more often. My goodness, what I learned about Joan of Arc through her performance. I mean, my goodness, she had Joan of Arc was a pure, pure spirit, you know, and she was also tormented and tortured by pretty much everybody. I've never realized and it was her performance, the purity of her performance, the purity of her intention, and that brought it home, not only the beauty of the score, but, you know, her personal being. And I think this is what's different about being an artist, which does make the questions about the heart matter, is the matter or medium of your work becomes your heart.
Right.
And that's why I've devoted my life, my working life, to not just trying to be an authentic artist working here, there and everywhere with students here or, you know, whoever, but also trying to create an environment in which artists can be loved, nurtured, protected, spiritually informed about the spiritual dangers of what they're doing, dangers to them. Yeah. Because it's all very well for the world to enjoy arts or even the church to enjoy and exploit their art, but who's looking after them?
Yeah.
Who's reminding them that if you do a prophetic role without being guarded spiritually, as a prophet needs to be guarded, you're in danger. And look how many artists commit suicide. Look how, like, Van Gogh chops off his ear, gets murdered or commits suicide. People don't know which. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. Vulnerability doesn't need to lead to demise. And I think I think that's really important to know. We begin vulnerable and we stay open, but we don't need to stay so damaged. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important for the church to look after its artists.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. And I thought it would be nice for us to look at some of the poetry that came into last podcast episode. Starting with Jackie's poem, which really stuck with me afterwards. Good. Just this wonderful concept of seeing the painful experiences in one's life as blessings. And obviously this tied really nicely into the reflection of Saint Faustina, with that really remarkable vision of her going to the altar with all these things being thrown at her by people that she knew.
The brooms made me laugh, yes.
Yeah. I think that there's more to that vision that could be explored poetically, please. Maybe, because I feel like the truth of it is not immediately apparent to me. So for those who haven't listened to the episode yet, she has this vision of herself going to an altar and having people throwing all kinds of things at her, and it's clearly their own resentments and their own they're malicious things. They're not just kind of by the by. And then when she goes on the altar, they ask her for graces, and she responds lovingly in a sort of spontaneous love. It's a gift that is given to her to be able to accept that.
Did you want me to say what I thought it was a revelation of?
Yes, do, yeah.
Well, basically, it's about her journey to becoming a saint.
Yes.
And the first thing about that is that it's revealed to her through the vision that she actually has a particular love for the very people who persecuted her most, because they hastened her to sanctity. So when she says she's going to the altar, it's the story, the prophetic revelation of Christ to her that she will become a saint, and that she will be filled with the joy of giving to the very people who've been the most vile to her.
Yeah.
And do you know what? It's interesting, Tim. I remember once, and this is like my life on a very tiny, small level, I once wrote a poem about forgiveness, inspired by someone who I absolutely at the time did not forgive.
Yeah.
But the poem forgave them before I did. And I ripped it up and threw it in the bin. And a mutual friend of this other person picked it out of the bin and stuck it together with sellotape and gave it back to me and said, you'll need this. And I think that's a vision of Christ encourages us to know that we've got more in us than we think we have.
Isn't that image of the poem being pasted back together such a powerful image? You know, it's like your attempt to do something and you give up and then a helping hand comes and puts it back together for you and says, no, you have actually accomplished it.
And not only that, that the fact that you can forgive that person, that you have forgiven them, don't forget it, because that is your capacity, and you will forgive them one day and you'll be glad you did. And so what Saint Faustina does from the altar is not only forgive people but pour gifts and graces on the very people who have destroyed her, because that's what Christians do, that's what Christ did on the cross, that's what Our Lady did as she nurtures the infant church, and every single person apart from, you know, Saint John, Mary, those are the only people that didn't crucify Jesus, except that their sins did.
That was an interesting point, yeah. There's just a few that sort of stayed close to Our Lady and didn't turn back from him, and she had to, in many ways, love the disciples who she knew would not, or she discovered would not kind of follow him to the end. Yeah, I mean, if people are listening to this and wondering what is we talking about, I think you need to listen to the podcast episode 14, because there's lots in there and these themes come up.
And I think one thing why I'd love them to listen to it is because every single person listening to this show already has in their heart and mind many, many, many inspirations, revelations and ways of understanding the faith.
Yeah.
And if they just captured them on a piece of paper and shared them with one person, they'd be amazed.
Mm-hmm.
And I am continually surprised at the beauty. And my friend Sarah Larkin, too, who I'm seeing this afternoon at the British Library and having a good old poet's natter, she runs workshops, too, and she does pastoral work in her church. And she was largely converted to Christ by reading the poems of Pope St. John Paul II. And she's not even Catholic. But she's a very sensitive person, and she could see the living interior life in this poetry and thought, the world is not as I have perceived it to be.
Yeah.
If these poems are true, then the world is remarkable and I need to know why.
Yeah.
And then she saw the sculptors of Meštrović, who is the national sculptor of Croatia. And I went to see his sculptures, inspired by her. Last time I went to Medjugorje, went up the bus from Split and saw them in the museum. And there you have extraordinary sculptures of Job and also a woman offering her child to be consecrated to God. But the grain of the stone is kind of like vertically passing through the rock. And so the transcendence present in that sculpture just made her think, I am more than I thought I was.
That's
the value of art.
That's really great. I love that, because it's bringing out the true meaning of the world, right? It's like, because that moment when you hear a song or a poem and you think, wow, yes, you know, like this is the true response that should come up in my heart when I see, you know, either the beauty of like the budding magnolias in spring, or the starkness of the barren trees in autumn, or whatever, that you can know in your heart that this is not something that's deceiving you. You can actually say, yes, this is truth. Like this is pointing me in the right direction. And I think that's the joy of knowing that this coming back to the quote, you know, the the inner workings, what's the intimacy in one's heart is the engine room of the world affairs. That's not just a way to help us cope with a meaningless world. It's a way to make us in touch with a world.
Reality. With reality, yeah. And the consequences of our actions. I have one or two things to say about that, Tim, mm-hmm. because, no, three, probably more. But anyway, time is limited until heaven. Hooray for heaven. I can't wait. So one is I want to remind you about why your songs are so beautiful, is that when one is listening to them, an entire landscape opens up in one's heart instantly. And it's the combination of what you're saying, the scriptures you use, the ideas you've had, and the voice you bring. And because recently I'd been listening to music and it was so boring. I thought, maybe I'm just, my mother used to say, only boring people get bored. So we were always kicked out of the kitchen and told to go and make something. And I was like, oh, this music is so boring. I must be really, really boring. So I was a bit annoyed about that. Yeah. But anyway, then I came to your concert and like, no, this is because that was boring music and this is great music. So hooray for that. And then there was, something else you said that made me think, oh, yes. Okay, so I was on the underground this morning, talking about reality and the engine of world affairs. And I took a few photographs of some of the advertisements because they really are what is coming at us from the world. And they have lots of money to spend on working out where people are so that the advertisements relate to people. So they employ people like my friend Chris, who is a semiotician, to tell them what the symbols are that are going to be useful to create stories to attach to the products. And the products have no relationship with the stories whatsoever, but the stories are what sells the product. So it's a dishonest process from the get-go.
Yeah, we've spoken about this on the B-side before.
Yeah, and it's really important. So every time I return to London, which is like once a month at least, I have a look at the strap lines and see where have we got to in our universal demise. Well, let me tell you, the strap lines this morning were the following. Feel the unreal. Okay, so feel the unreal was the strap line across a whole range of posters of people walking up walls. So the walking on water, etc. And I just thought, oh my goodness. And I wrote on my phone, I just thought to myself, if you don't know what reality is for, and if you don't know how reality functions and how you're connected to it and what your actions matter, then you are just going to want to feel the unreal, aren't you? And you might want to buy that very boring tracksuit that goes with that completely deranged strap line, because it just looks funny that you're flying through the air or walking upwards on a vertical wall. Yeah. And I just think we've got more deranged than before. And this is our moment of opportunity.
Yeah.
Because even the simplest and most obvious thing that anybody has to say who prays is going to be better than that.
Sarah, I want us to carry on this conversation, but there's another program that's about to start. So we're going to wrap it up here. The podcast B-side, what is it that the podcast does? There's something you say at the end of the podcast that I really love.
Oh yeah, I prayed for a little strap line and it wasn't Feel the Unreal. Yeah. We try to bring poems old and new to the cutting edge of contemporary culture, because the cutting edge is grace.
St. John Paul II.
Pray for us.
Ine loyanum veloishan loyanum velo.
A Psalm of David. Behold, he neither sleeps nor slumbers, the guardian of Israel.
This was a Radio Maria podcast. If you enjoyed it, do please click like and subscribe on your podcast provider or leave us a review. Every bit of feedback helps increase our visibility and allows us to reach more people with the message of Christ's saving truth. And if you don't already, you can listen to Radio Maria live either online or on DAB in selected regions of the UK. We'd love for you to call in live and be part of the conversation. See our website, radiomariaengland.uk, for more details and a full schedule of programs. And do please consider making a donation so that we can keep making more programs like this. We are completely dependent upon the generosity of our listeners.